this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome, everybody, to Wellness and Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I am a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher, and I am joined by your co-host and my very good friend, Dr. Martin Mendelson. Martin is a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, thought leader, and author. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals from all around the world pursue wellness in dentistry. And today, we're going to talk about burnout. And this is a topic that's becoming it's come out of the shadows, let's say. You know, it's been in the shadows for the last, 70 years probably in dentistry, but it's really coming out of the shadows. And Martin and I are really happy to be some of the people that are helping to bring this out of the shadows. Now, if you're interested in spending 2 days with us, make sure to go to our wellnessanddentistry.com website, go to links and click on Lightside Live. That is our in-person 2-day course. You get 12 continuing education credits, and it's a transformative 2-day experience. It's our favorite days of the year to teach this course. So make sure you go there. So Martin, burnout.
Yeah, it's a absolute reality and a new buzzword all at the same time.
That's right.
Because as you and I know, burnout is multifaceted. It isn't just one thing. And I've also observed a lot of misunderstanding about what burnout is and even how to combat it.
Let's talk first about just some of the facts about it, right?
Yeah.
So it's estimated that it's a global burden of $300 billion a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. It shows decreased productivity in any business. This isn't just dentistry, right?
Yep.
Retention, absenteeism, compensation costs. The World Health Organization predicted that the global burnout pandemic was going to start in 2023. So we are, many years into this already.
Yeah.
It's something that has already happened. You know, the good part about, if we have to look positively and thinking more people are in burnout right now, the good thing about it is that there's more research coming out about it. There's more experts that are speaking up about it. There's more resources. There's more money put towards it. There's more effort put towards it. So I think from a positivity standpoint, I don't know if dentistry has gone up in burnout recently. I think it probably has, but I don't think it has gigantically. I think this has really always been there, but I think it is growing now.
Yeah, and I would also say that, first of all, I agree with you, and second of all, it could be that we have greater frustrations in different areas today, right?
I think that's a better way of saying it. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So like pre-2020, we had staff challenges or team challenges here and there. Now it seems a lot more ubiquitous, which can lead to, formal burnout for individuals because they don't feel in control and they're having trouble with stability of their practice, which then rifles down to productivity and mindset and just culture and morale and all that kind of stuff. So I think overall, yeah, I would agree. And also at the same time, certain things have shifted from like one emphasis of focus to another.
Yeah, well, let's first talk about some of the definitions.
Yeah,
okay?
I think that's really important.
I think that when I first got into this topic, I didn't really know what it was. You know, I feel like I could kind of describe it.
Yeah.
But if you asked me to give a definition,
yeah,
I didn't really know what it is. And
yeah,
a lot of this came from Dr. Christina Maslach's, or Maslach, I don't know how exactly you say her name. She's basically the leading researcher on burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
really three things. So feeling exhausted,
mm-hmm.
feeling cynical,
yep,
and feeling ineffective.
Yep.
So those are the three tenets, let's say, of burnout. And so I would encourage anybody who's listening to this to have the self-awareness to say, am I feeling exhausted? Most dentists do, even if they're not in burnout. Am I feeling cynical? That's an interesting one, right?
That's my favorite one, actually.
Yes. And am I feeling ineffective?
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to feel ineffective in something that most of us are so good at.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I look back when I felt ineffective, when I was really going through burnout, and I didn't know this when I was going through it, of course, but hindsight is 20/20. And it's weird to look back at my cases. I still had beautiful cases. Now, of
Yeah.
course, I still had complications, I still had problems with patients, but it's not like my clinical work was any different. It was my feeling about my clinical work that was different.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to say, in just kind of as we're talking about the definition, is where burnout comes from. Okay. So it can come from three different areas. It can come from external influences, it can come from work environment, and it can come from the individual as well. Okay. So it's like we have the three tenants, and then we have the three places that it comes from.
Yeah.
Okay. So the three places that it comes from makes those three tenets of burnout.
And I would say in dentistry, you have control over two out of the three at all times and one out of the three with intention. And so what I mean by that is, you talked about external influences, internal influences, and then mindset, or did I conflate two of those together?
No, so external influences,
Yeah.
work environment,
Work
which
environment,
would
that's what I
kind of
asked.
be the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And then individual.
Yeah. So, even with the external stuff relative to problem patients, that can actually ultimately be dealt with in a variety of different ways. Whether you choose to take insurance reimbursement or not. Now, that's not an immediate solution. That's a really heavy lift. It needs to be done with care and done with analytics. But again, that's another one that can be dealt with. Is it a mindset or is it a reality, right? And so, when I coach people and when I go in with teams as well, when you're running into a roadblock, is it a skill gap? Is it a resource gap or is it a mindset gap? And if you look at these three things, interestingly enough, they can all be dealt with. Now, that doesn't mean they're easily dealt with, but they can all three be dealt with. And, the cynicism part of the definition is the one that I always chuckle at. And I'm not chuckling at people, I'm chuckling with people because the amount of cynicism I see, particularly on social media, from dentist to dentist or dental personnel to dental personnel, is I'm going to say it, nothing shy of ridiculous. And so you're sitting there being cynical and making these globalistic statements like nobody wants to work anymore and I can't find hygienists and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, oh my gosh, how do you not see that as cynicism, which then in my head leads into the ineffectiveness, right? Because if you're so cynical and you're getting frustrated, then you're going to tell yourself a story, either real or fabricated, that whatever it is I do, nothing works. Really? How true is that? If we looked at the totality of all the things you had to do today, is it true that you couldn't get anything done? Or are we choosing to focus on the two, three, half a dozen things that didn't go well within the midst of the 100 or more decisions you made that day?
It's so good, and you boiled that down so well, because that's exactly how I felt. And kind of what I was describing before was, I felt like I was a loser in my practice, but when you looked at the numbers or at the data or at the photos or at the cases, that wasn't the case. Nothing really changed for me clinically. It was, I was definitely suffering in my people skills. And one of the things that I love that you talked about with the three places where burnout comes from, external influences, work environment, individual, the first thing that I think of, how most people have described to you and me when they're in our online courses or in-person courses or coaching with you or with your team programs, as many times I say I feel out of control, like, I can't control what my insurance is reimbursing me. I can't control that my team is coming in late. I can't control that my husband or wife always wants me home. I can't control my patient's treatment acceptance. We many times feel out of control, and so much anxiety comes from feeling out of control. But what's nice about this is at least one third of these you immediately have control of, which is the individual, right? So we can control our emotions, but this is a skill, right? Simple, not easy, I think is something that you taught me. And one of my big mantras that I like to talk about is talking about focusing on what you can control and not worrying about what you can't. But like you said, there are things in the external influences that maybe you can't control, but maybe you can. So if you can control, do it. Put the
And I
effort
mean,
in
look.
and control it.
Yeah, I mean, look at one of the biggest best-selling books out right now. It's The Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins. And the whole point of the Let Them Theory is something happens and you go, let them, let them go to dinner without inviting me. Let them, not text me back. Let them do. And so it's all a similar discussion. And it's all about how we choose to interact with the world. And so, I mean, this goes back to, in my head, to coaching 101, because these thoughts that we bat around that many times can either lead, support, or aggravate the cynicism are often called limiting beliefs. And so it's, you're creating these rules about the world that you live in. And so the antidote question is always, we already stated it in this episode today, how true is that? The biggest thing to watch out for is when you find yourself either internally or verbally using globalistic statements. Nobody wants to work anymore. All my patients are insurance minded. None of my clinical cases today went well. The
No one
whole
wants to
day
do facially
sucked.
driven treatment plans, comprehensive treatment.
The whole day sucked. Really?
Yeah. That's so true. I mean, I remember training for my SAT, and I remember them saying, look for answers that have these globalistic answers, Every person does this. All dogs in the study show this, that. And generally, those were wrong anyways. So they always said, like in test taking theory, to just delete that anyways. But it's so funny how in our day to day, we'll use these and not see anything wrong with them.
Totally.
With so we talked about the three areas that burnout can come from. We talked about the three different things that really encompass like a definition of burnout, but I want to be very specific about what causes burnout. Okay, so burnout comes from three different areas, but what causes it is chronic stress. Okay, and chronic stress is different from stress. So I don't want people to think that, oh, I have stress, because unlike acute stress, which is temporary and it's like going through a tunnel very fast, chronic stress is that tunnel where you don't know where the end is. It never lets up. That is the one cause of burnout. Okay. So we need to have the self-awareness. We need to have enough self-awareness to then know where chronic stress is coming from in your life. And in the research, this is shown in six different ways. Okay, so it's shown in your, they call it the chronic stress petri dish. All right, and for all of us scientists, bringing you back to high school and college and growing bacteria on petri dish and things, you have the workload. So, what is your workload? Is it too much? Is it too little? You have the values, your values, what lets us connect with our work on a deeper level. You have the reward. So that's the level of reward that we get from our job. That can be money, that can be fame, acknowledgement, gratitude, etc. You have the control, which is the autonomy we have with where we work, when we work, how we do this work. You also have fairness, which is one that is not as black and white. That's like the feeling that we're treated equally at work relative to our colleagues. And then the last thing is community. So the professional relationships that these really contribute enormously to minimizing burnout and boosting engagement. So let me say all six of those real quick. Workout, or sorry, workout. I wish that was one of them. That's one of the answers. Workload, values, reward, control, fairness, and community.
So here's where my brain's exploding. Look at the last three: control, fairness, and community, right? If you're having challenges with your team and you feel like it's you against them, then you're already checking all those three boxes off.
True.
And so, what's it worth to you to continue to have these challenges versus making a change? Whatever making a change means, whether it's different behavior by certain members of the team, whether it's, having certain members self-select out or asking them to be successful somewhere else. But the point is that what has to change within that? Because you can't, you talked about chronic stress. You can't expect to be stressed out every single time you think about work and have that be sustainable over the long haul. It's just not only is it not reasonable, it's also something that'll just absolutely drive you to ultimate frustration.
Yeah, I mean, I like that control is on here. Control is an interesting one, especially when you and I have doctors that are associates and they're like, I can't dictate what materials I want to use. I can't dictate what time I want to show up or what time I leave. However, when I leave, I don't have to do hiring and firing. I don't have to do ordering. I'm not managing the team. So, especially with associates, there's always this balance between autonomy and, I mean, many times it's money. Associates tend to make less, tend to have less autonomy, but also have, t oh, it's not money. No, that's wrong. It's autonomy and responsibility. Those are really the two sides of the seesaw with whether being a practice owner or whether being an associate. And we're seeing a lot more dentists, especially young doctors, going towards the forever associate route, which back in the day was kind of crazy. Like, you never really heard of someone, like, let's say in the 80s or 90s, that their whole career was going to be an associate. It didn't happen that often. Now you're hearing about it more. And I think it's actually a really positive thing because not everybody is meant to be an owner. Not everybody wants that. And I think too, maybe with now having more spouses working as well, when we're talking about, let's say, 40 years ago, right? We had mostly men and, again, not as many women in the workplace. Now, one of the great things that we have too for people, especially for dental professionals, whether they're whatever gender, is that they may have some financial support from their spouse too. So it may not all be on them. And so they can do this long-term associateship where they leave, they clock out, and they don't have to think about that.
100%. 100%.
One of the biggest changes that I think you can make quickly based on these six areas of the Petri dish is workload. Now, of course, I'm implying that you have the control and autonomy to make that change. Whether it's money-based, whether it's that you're an associate, whatever. But you and I know many people that say, I love dentistry. I just can't do it 5 days a week or more. I can do it 4 days a week, no problem. Or I can do it 3 days a week, no problem. I think you told us something on a previous episode about something you had seen of a dentist that used to kind of make fun of dentists that only worked a few days a week, and then they realized that why that is the case.
It was I think it was actually a reel on Instagram, believe it or not. It was a younger dentist who admitted that he used to think that dentists who only work 3 or 4 days a week were, lazy. And then he opened his own practice and realized it's like, oh, oops. Yeah, that's actually the exact opposite. And if we really want to be in this for the long haul, we need to take some time off in order to be more well rested, to be able to handle the stressors that come with this job of ours.
Yeah, so when you look at those six, workload is a big thing. So if you are having the self-awareness that you're feeling ineffective, you're feeling cynical, you're feeling exhausted, you're having this chronic stress, and maybe you're going to this place of burnout or you're already there, that is the easiest way to control something, and it may not fix everything, but usually we see it makes a huge difference. And we've had many doctors that have gone through our courses or our coaching, and they go from 5 days a week to 4 days a week. And most of the time they make the same amount of money or more. Now, what's interesting about that? You're both reducing the workload and increasing the reward. Remember, reward is one of the chronic petri dishes. So these are related in so many ways that you can kind of get a twofer. If you take a day off a week and you make the same amount of money, then by definition, you're increasing your reward, financial reward I'm talking about, right? And so you can hit two at once even.
Well, what if we take even a simpler step back, a baby step before we even get there? What about taking a lunch? What about
Great
taking a
idea.
break mid-afternoon to go to the bathroom? And so, I'm making fun as a joke, but it's also not a joke at the same time. I mean,
Not a joke. It's
if
honestly not a joke. I
no,
hear this so often, and I think that people think they're the only ones that
Yeah.
don't get water the entire day, don't go to the bathroom for 9 hours during the day because they're treating patients and then they need to do a hygiene check. And then their husband or wife is calling them, and then their front office asks them to do something, and then the chair breaks. You're so right. Let's start with some baby steps.
Yeah, let's start with some baby steps. And here's the thing. Because I've had this conversation before with people where they look me in the face and they go, "I just don't have time for lunch." And I look at them and I say, so let me ask you a different question. How would you like to be treated dentally or medically by a provider that was so hungry they couldn't see straight? How would you like to be treated by a medical or dental provider who has to go to the bathroom so bad they're losing concentration? If the answer is you wouldn't like that, then why are you accepting that yourself? And so it goes back to the phrase that you use all the time, which I love, putting your own oxygen mask on first. And so it's a very small thing. And when we look at it from a purely objective perspective, we will very quickly see how absolutely absurd it is to not be able to take lunch. We've mentioned my good friend Jay Platt many times on this podcast. He's an oral surgeon. He's incredibly successful. His success rates are far above the literature. His financial success is far above any other single oral surgeon I've ever seen. And he goes to the gym 90 minutes every single day in the middle of the day. So I'll fight anybody to tell me it's not possible because, yes, it is. It's a choice. And easy for me to say, sitting here in my home office recording this podcast. It is easy for me to say, but that doesn't mean it can't be done.
I think that people, I was like this. I was one of these people, scheduling people on my lunch, seeing the emergency patient, not having time for lunch, not having time to drink a sip of water in between patients. And my practice isn't high volume. I have a low volume practice, and I still didn't have time. And I think especially for people scheduling during their lunch break, I know a lot of dentists that will schedule a lunch break. But they never actually get it because there's always an emergency patient, a new patient that they have to get in. And I'm for those people that are listening, I'm saying this in quotes, they have to get in. And I would encourage you to use Martin's phrase, how true is that? How true is that you have to get them in? For me, it came from a good place. It came from wanting to help the doc or the dent, excuse me, wanting to help the patient caring for the patient,
Yeah.
genuinely wanting to help them as soon as I could, and sacrificing myself in that process,
Yeah.
which I now know is not sustainable.
Yeah.
But this, I boil this down to one of my main three tenets, which is setting expectations and boundaries.
Yeah.
We have to have boundaries with
Yeah.
the patient. Like, Mrs. Jones, I'm sorry that your crown fell off. I'm really sorry, whether you did it or not. But we have patients booked the entire day.
Yeah.
We can see you tomorrow afternoon. Well,
Yeah.
what am I going to do? But my cry, it's off, and it. I'm sorry, we don't have the time. Well, can you
Right.
see me on my lunch break? I'm sorry, our doctors also need to eat lunch too. They're also
Yeah.
humans just like you, and we can't be doing surgeries and procedures without our doctors being in the right frame of mind or in physical shape too. We just have to be okay with setting these boundaries.
Absolutely. It's interesting. Our mutual friend Ben Freiberg, who wrote a book that's coming out this year.
Yes.
I believe you wrote the foreword to the book. It's
I
really good.
did, yes.
So he was chatting on one of the platforms, one of the social media platforms the other day, and this subject came up. And basically he piped in because he's a coach for practice productivity and stuff. And so he piped in, he's like, look, we have two slots for emergencies every single day. We don't work through our lunch hour for this. And basically what we say is, hey, you're very important to us. We will make it our business to work you in at some point today. We can't tell you when that's going to be. So we would like to see you here at X time. Please bring something to occupy your time. And we will get to you when we get to you. And so, I loved it because frankly, that's what the way we handled it when I was in practice, and it worked quite well. And it sets expectations and it sets boundaries on the part of the patient. And one thing we've been talking around, which we haven't said blatantly yet, which I'd like to say blatantly now, is we're also setting expectations and boundaries with the team that schedules the patients into the schedule.
Right, yes.
So here's the thing, and I'm a big believer in this, and I've had people who have reported to me do similar things in my past, both clinically and in the business world, which is this. Okay, so you put Mrs. Jones in at noon. We had an understanding that this is the lunch hour, so we can all get a break. I need you to give her a call back right now and explain that an error was made and that, it's not possible to be seen at noon. However, this is how we can accommodate you. And you make the person responsible for the, I'll call it error, to rectify said error. And if you don't do that, guess what happens? It's going to happen again and again and again and again because you didn't set the expectation and the boundary with your own team member.
I think many front office team members believe that they're supposed to get the patients in. That's their
Correct.
goal, right? Get the patient in,
Yeah.
get them in, get the production, or let's take care of any liabilities we may have, right? Let's get them in. So many times they believe they're doing the right thing.
Correct.
And I believe we need to give them the psychological safety
Yes.
for them to say, no, we
Yeah.
can't get you in,
Yeah.
but to also train them well enough to give them the scripts on
Yeah.
how to set that. Like, we've talked about this in a previous episode, maybe almost a year ago, where we talked about telling them to bring a book. Now,
Yeah.
I think when you were doing that in practice, that made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Nowadays, people are going to sit on their phone, right? But
Yeah.
why would you still say a book today? Because I believe it implies that they're going
Yep.
to be there for a while.
Yep. And I also want to be very clear too. I'm not saying you need to be a jerk to that team member. What I'm saying is you need to hold that team member accountable. And so this is not about yelling. This is not about saying, you're wrong, or why the heck did you do that? It's none of that. It's, hey, Susie, hey, Johnny, I see that you put a patient in the schedule at noon. I know that, you always like to do right by our patients, while at the same time, this is going to be a problem. And so what I need for to happen now is for you to get back on the phone, and share with the patient, this is not workable, this is not possible. And here are our other solutions. And if you need to go through what those solutions are with that team member there, then do that, because it's not going to do them any good for them to be unsupported. Because if they put the patient in at noon, as you just said, 9 times out of 10, they're doing what they believe was what they needed to do. So by us not actually being part of the solution in whatever way that's appropriate, either coaching them to their coming to their own conclusion or giving them the right answer, depending on the situation and how quickly we need to resolve it, we're not doing them any service, nor are we doing ourselves a service, and we're setting up for this to happen again without really talking about the bigger picture.
This discussion about emergency patients or bringing people in at lunch, it's funny how our discussion goes there immediately. And it's really only a small portion of that that's clinical.
Yep.
And for those of you that are listening to this podcast or watching us on YouTube, and this may be one of your first exposures to talking about burnout in dentistry, I want you to have the self-awareness to see how little burnout in dentistry is caused by clinical problems. Now, you could say that, well, this boiled down to a clinical problem, right? The crown fell off. And again, whether you did it or it was done 20 years ago in another country or whatever, yes, it stemmed from a clinical problem. But if the patient already had an appointment, it wouldn't be a big deal, right? So there's all these other factors that we need to get better at outside of our clinical work. That's really what reduces the burnout. I mean, you and I have both known dentists that have this self-awareness to say, I'm having burnout. I can't do this anymore. I'm thinking about quitting. I've already told my spouse that, this is the end. I just can't, I can't go on in dentistry like this. And so what they'll do is say, well, then you know what I need to do? I've always wanted to learn ortho. I'm gonna just start taking an ortho class. Or I really, if I just were doing more all on X cases, I think I'd feel a lot better. And they take these classes, and guess what happens, Martin? Nothing. They may learn a new clinical skill, but they still have burnout because when you look at the chronic petri dish of burnout, there were six things on there. None of them were getting better clinically. Now, you could argue that getting better clinically may contribute to the control part of the petri dish, right? That's one part. But that's if all of your burnout is caused by complications. And very, very, very rarely is that the case. Most of the problems that we see in the dental practice are practice management based, people management based, communications, expectations, boundaries. And so when you look at those, if you want to do something about it, spend time, money, and effort on those things. Go take something like our course, August 1st and 2nd in Irvine, California. Go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to our links, click on it, and sign up. Or there's others out there, right? Or take a communication class, take a class on leadership, right? All these are the things that most dental professionals need to improve. It's not your clinical game.
Well, and I want to say something that I very firmly believe, and I know you do too. Escapism isn't the answer either. And so, whether that's escapism through substances on a regular basis, whether that's escapism with a 5-star luxury vacation, you can't get away from burnout if you're not addressing the root causes of burnout. And so, if you're not addressing the root causes, which we've talked about in this episode, then do you really think that things are going to be different when you get back from Italy? The answer is no.
I mean, what going on the vacation may do is reduce your workload. That could be one positive thing, but your communication skills are going to be the same when you get back. Your team member's still going to be showing up 10 minutes late when you tell them to be there at 8 a.m. and they're there at 8:10 every day and they think that's fine, right? Your patients believing that all of your treatment should last forever, that may still be there. Now, if you think of all those and you say, well, I'm out of control of all those, let's focus on what you can control. So, can
Absolutely.
you control your assistant coming in 10 minutes late? No, you can't. But what can you control? You can have a communication about, have some communication with them about it. You can set an expectation for them. You can set boundaries with them about a verbal warning, written warning, reduced hours, let's say, right? Those are the things you can control, but you have to learn how to do those. Those are most of those things are skills that we never learned.
Well, and the other thing I'll say is don't kid yourself. The rest of your team sees that you're not dealing with the one assistant or the one that we're picking on. We're using the word assistant too much. The one team member,
Yes.
we love assistants, the one team member who keeps coming in late. Do you think they don't see that? Do you think they don't understand that this individual is taking advantage of you? Do you think that they don't, some of whom, might have thoughts, well, if Susie or Johnny gets away with it, why can't I get away with X? So again, this is about leadership, not management. This is not about micromanagement. This is about communication, psychological safety, expectations, communications, and boundaries, period.
Yeah. So what final thoughts do we have about burnout? I mean, in this episode, our goal wasn't to give you all the answers. We
Right.
have other episodes where we talk about that. This one was really having self-awareness about what is burnout, especially in dentistry. What are the some specifics of it? What's the research on it? How do we get there? How do we Not necessarily how we get out of it, but having the recognition of what's causing it. What are some thoughts that you have?
I think it's very much that relative to really taking the time to look at, okay, let me look at my life right now through the lens of the definitions of burnout. Where are the areas of stressor in my life, in my practice? Where are they coming from? How can they be modified? Not if, but how. Because 90% of the time, in some way, shape, or form, there can be changes made. Are those short-term changes? Are those long-term changes? And keep asking yourself, okay, how am I doing with kind of manifesting through action, not just thought, the kind of practice or the kind of work environment that I want to live in? Because you have two choices. You can either sit and say nothing and ruminate over it, or you can evaluate and actually attempt to do something about it. Those are your basic two choices, right? So it's about awareness, it's about evaluation, and then therefore, what from the evaluation has come to light of specific things I can do to lift my burden so that we don't feel that, quitting time and vacation time are ultimate escapes.
Yeah. For me, it's really just that first step of, my ripple framework, which is realize, is having the realization that something has changed. You used to love going into the practice, now you kind of dread it. You used to really talk so well about your team, but now you feel like you have the worst team ever. You used to think about all the great patients that were coming in, now you look and see all the worst patients that are coming in. Like some of those feelings that change. Now, I want people to understand that they go through waves, they go through cycles, but when you have that self-awareness, that's when you need to act. Unfortunately, Martin and I see that most dentists or dental professionals don't act until they have to. And what we would love to see is people having the realization, oh, something's a little bit different, making a change that can be outside of the practice or inside of the practice. And then thriving on that, right? And it starts with these baby steps, like Martin was talking about. So that's really what we'd like to get across to you guys today is having the awareness, burnout is out there. It is a big problem. There's some research showing that, 60% of dentists experience burnout. Knowing what signs are, knowing where they come from. And then in our other episodes, we've talked a lot about this, and we're going to talk even more about how we can then help our burnout. So, Martin, what should people do if they want to get a hold of us, if they want to come to our
Sure.
courses, or if they want to share our podcast?
So it's really one-stop shop if to get you started. So if you go to wellnessanddentistry.com, that has links to Kyle's website, my website, our in-person two-day course, Lightside Live in Irvine, California, August 1st and 2nd. And so it's really the first place you go. It has our social media links and so forth. So go to wellnessanddentistry.com, and then you can go down whichever rabbit hole you'd like to with all the information on there.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
Take care.